Traveling to the Stars. It's easy in an hour-long TV show. No time to waste. Poof.
Calculations complete. Jumping in 3, 2, 1.
Jump!
Battlestar Galactica just warps from one galaxy to another, but we poor Earthlings must travel for centuries at current technology to even make it to the nearest useless no-planet star system. Those kinds of limitations represent a challenge to astronaut and scientist Dr. Mae Carroll Jemison. Back in 1992, Jemison was science specialist on board the space shuttle Endeavour when she became the first woman of color to travel into space.
I think the important thing is for people to understand and to know that, yes, we do have and are willing to accept women and minorities as astronauts. And I hope that I'm just the first in a long line of African-American women who will be involved in the space program.
Jemison left NASA back in 1993, but her scientific work has continued. And this year, she and her team won a grant from the Pentagon to explore all of the technology required for colonies of humans to make it to the stars. The project is called the 100-Year Starship, and Mae Jemison is the pilot, with plenty of enthusiasm about space travel and no doubts whatsoever.
We're going to the stars. The idea behind all of this for DARPA is, how do we trigger that next round of innovation that comes from space exploration? Not just innovation, but that far-reaching, changing knowledge. And that's what this program is about. And what we are doing is to create an organization, 100-Year Starship, that will make sure that all the capabilities for interstellar flight are in place here on this Earth, that they are alive, they exist over the next 100 years. And if someone chooses to go to the stars, they will have all the capacity there to need it to do it.
And the technologies that are going to enable the Starship technology to work are way beyond just rockets and orbital vehicles. I mean, there's a whole lot of human-based technology that's going to have to actually be in place before we can send a team to the stars, because, of course, they're not going to necessarily get there. Their children may get there. And so you got to create a sustaining environment that it could actually operate for more than a generation.
So here's the thing. We don't actually know what's going to happen. We don't know how that mission is going to occur. We know that there are some technological challenges, hardcore machine challenges. We know that there are challenges in understanding, you know, how society evolves, about how humans operate and in weightlessness, about feeding people, about establishing other ecosystems. So if you just were to step off some of the challenges, we first of all have to put in the context that it's a long way away. And we're not even necessarily going to go to the next star system. It may be a different one because it more is more habitable. So we have to figure out that time-distance solutions. Time-distance solutions could include things like being able to go really, really fast, right? So you need a lot of energy to do that. If you get close to the speed of light, you need a tremendous amount of energy for that to happen. And it's not going to happen with chemical rockets. So we've changed that. You have to understand, as you said, if it's going to take a long time to get there, then you have to figure out how to have a system or a vehicle that allows people to recycle things that's self-sustaining.
Right. Yeah.
So there are a number of challenges. But I would also say one of the challenges has to do, how do people interact with one another?
Yeah,
what is our society? What is our culture?
You got to pick the right team that's going to be on an interstellar craft for the rest of their lives.
And when we say team, it's sort of crew inhabitants. Right? Because it's not like the 4 or 5 or even 20 or even 100 people. It's going to be more than that.
NASA made a decision to include you as an astronaut. Then you became the first African-American woman to go into space, right?
I am the first African-American woman to go into space. I'm, in fact, the first woman of color in the world to go into space.
Exactly. And so by making that decision, obviously, it transformed your life. What did NASA get? Because part of your foundation is to create an inclusive project that's going to do this 100-year Starship project.
Well, I got to start off by saying that there was a decision not to include women at the beginning of the space program, which had nothing to do with women's capabilities. Okay, so that was a societal, conscious societal decision. What did we lose by not including women? First of all, a tremendous amount of talent. We were only including talent from a small section of our society.
And I love that. And you know, NASA, how smart are they? Yeah, we're going to go to the stars, but we're not going to send any women. Oh, that'll work. Yeah, that'll work.
Well, I mean, it's not just about sending women and sort of sending gender. It's about the perspective. So when we talk about a key point, the first point of our proposal is inclusion, because you need the perspective of, you know, the full capabilities of society to be able to make it happen. What you asked, what made a difference by me being involved right. with NASA as an astronaut? We started saying that we were going to take advantage of all the talent that's there available to us. And that's a big deal.
It's a big thing, yeah.
The one right now today, we're struggling with the whole idea of a science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and innovation, whereas we're not taking the full advantage of the women, the underrepresented minorities in the sciences, and training them fully and making opportunities available to them.
And if you ask biologists, and not to convert this into biology, but if you ask biologists, unless you have the broadest sort of gene pool available, you're not going to set up a terribly successful colony outside of our solar system. You have to have everybody's participation.
And this, you know what? Inclusion includes disciplines. It is biology, right? Mm-hmm. It's biology in terms of genetics. It's biology in terms of agriculture, ecosystems. It's art. It's economics. How do you figure out what does money mean in a system like that?
Go.
What is the barter? What are the reasons? There are a lot of different areas that we have to look at. The question becomes, is this realistic? And I always hearken back to H.G. Wells when he wrote First Man on the Moon in 1901. How fantastical was that in 1901 to imagine that we would have a person on the moon? Yet less than 69 years later, we landed a human on the moon. The rapidity of our knowledge base is so much greater now. The growth of our knowledge is so much greater now. Our technological capabilities are so much greater now that it's certainly a reality. It's a real possibility. It's a real challenge.
Forget near-Earth orbit. We're going to the stars. Dr. Mae Jemison, former NASA astronaut and director of the 100-Year Starship Project. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.